Potter's Shed. That's a pretty nice one, isn't it? Flower boxes and everything. When I was in high school, one of our neighbors, who was retired, he had been a bookbinder, but he decided he was going to take up working with clay. And he actually had a shed in his backyard, and he had a wheel, and he had a kiln so he could fire the clay as well. He gave lessons to anyone in the neighborhood that wanted to come and learn how to paint with oil paints. And one winter, one of my neighbors, Pat Schnur, and myself took some courses from Fanshawe College, and he was taking the pottery course at the same time. So it was interesting to watch them with the wheel and, you know, trying to get the wheel going at the right speed and your hands working together. And they had like a sewing machine pedal, you know, to vary the speed on it. And they get it so far, and then something would go wrong and the whole thing would come down. And it was really interesting to watch then how the potter would reshape the clay until it was something pleasing. And sometimes that took a lot of effort. In this week's First Testament reading in Jeremiah, God invites Jeremiah to enter a potter's shed and there observe the potter working with clay so that Jeremiah may better hear God's words, understand God's way with Israel, and summon God's people to follow God's way. Jeremiah must leave his familiar spaces, step away from scriptures and the sanctuaries, and bypass the committee meetings and professional development seminars, if indeed they had them then, and instead learn about God and God's people by watching an artist at work. We too must visit the potter's shed or watch a painter mix her paints and fill her canvas in the open air. Feel the weaver's coarse spun wool as she weaves her tapestry of richly colored threads. Smell the shavings in a woodworker's garage as he shapes and matches the joints that will secure board to board. Hear the songwriter test chord progressions and lyrical phrases as they scribble, strum, and hum. When we do, we will learn something new about God and will hear a fresh summons for God's people. Other scriptures invite us to imagine God as a ruler and judge, a writer and teacher, a farmer and a builder, father, mother, and lover. Jeremiah 18 invites us to see God as an artisan, an artist. And the image is not new in scriptures. Their psalm reading also speaks of God as the creator of humankind with the intimacy of that relationship. The psalmist speaks of God as knitting together our inward parts and hemming us together in completion. In the stories of creation that we see in Genesis 1, it portrays God as the first poet, designer, metal worker, and landscaper, as God speaks, divides, fashions, and populates the cosmos. In Genesis 2, God first shapes clay, sculpting and forming humankind from the sediment of the earth. As God's hands knead and smooth the moist dirt, God breathes life into God's new creation, Ruah, so that the human being is simultaneously grounded by this connection to earth and animated by the very breath of God. Now in Jeremiah 18, we hear that God did not simply shape us once or for all. To this day, God tells Jeremiah, God's people are all clay, that has not yet been fired. So until the clay is fired, it is still malleable. In this clay, if it dries and it shrinks and hardens into a permanent structure and shape, it still may be decorative, and it's often functional, but is most often designed for a single purpose. It might be a brick, or a tile, or a bowl, or a plate, or a mug, or a vase. You get the picture. It might even be a lamp. But it's easy to break. Such clay, now dry ceramic, is often lovely and often useful, but it's very specialized, and it's also rigid and brittle. Clay that has not been fired is plastic. It's like if I took that Play-Doh out and dropped it on the floor, it wouldn't break. It would remain in whatever glob shape that it currently is. But if you took a ceramic mug and dropped it on the floor, well, it might survive on the carpet. But if you dropped it out on the hard floor, most likely it would break, or at least likely the handle would break off it. If it is still malleable, it can be shaped and reshaped infinitely, and it is material of possibility. Moldable, flexible, responsive. Though God shaped humankind and breathed life into its nostrils, God did not fire the clay from which God made us. No one of us is only a tile, a pitcher, or a lamp. God is able to still shape us and reshape us, and God labors tirelessly at the wheel on our behalf. God assesses our character, perceives our strengths and our weaknesses, builds on our strengths, and when flaws are found in us, works diligently to remedy them. After Jeremiah's visit to the potter's shed, and after God explains to Jeremiah just how God is a potter and just how God's people are like clay in God's hands, whom God is able to reform, God changes gears and begins to talk about God's plans for nations and kingdoms. It almost seems to be a new subject, for now God is not talking about the house of Israel in particular, or rather about any nation at all. God also sets aside the image of potter and clay for a moment and revisits imagery from Jeremiah's commission in chapter 1, plucking up or pulling down, building and planting. And this seemingly digressions stands as a corrective against a possible misinterpretation of the living parable of the potter and the clay. God's plans for a nation or a people or a kingdom, God explains, are not fixed, and they are not determined apart from our own choices. On one hand, God's good plan to build up people may be thwarted by their choice to do what is wrong or is evil. On the other hand, God may plan to pull down a kingdom that has made itself great on the backs of the oppressed. But if that nation turns away from those wrongdoings, God may change God's mind concerning this destruction. Just as we, the unfired clay, respond to the potter's touch, to water, and to the wheel, so God responds to us. And so we see that at the heart of this passage is the complex interaction between God, the artist and maker, on one hand, and on the other, God's people, who are like clay in God's hands, but are also so much more. God cannot make us do anything. God cannot make us use our gifts or choose the good, nor can God affect our conversion or direct our lives and our will to a new path and purpose if we do not also choose them. We are not automatons or closed circuits. The shape of our character and our lives is not fixed, for we remain supple. We as individuals and as communities may be formed through education and the practice of virtue, but we may also be deformed through abuse and ambition. We are susceptible to influence, suggestion, temptation, and corruption. But we are also resilient and capable of astonishingly good things and true conversion. Through it all, even in the company of others and even in relationship with God, each of us forms our own intentions and exercises our own free will. For we are a part of our own and creation's creative process. We are a living part. So may we today honor that responsibility and offer thanks to God, the Creator, for this wonderful promise. Thanks be to God. Amen.